be stricken from the records.
Objection sustained.
If it please the court, Your Honor, at this time I would like to introduce my three main witnesses.
Request granted. Proceed with the testimony.
And proceed we will, coming to you from a non-disclosed location from the great state of Amnesia in a virus-free studio on the east side of West Palm Beach. Welcome to Lifestyles and the Law Today. This show is for informational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. Good day to you. I'm Alan Mason, your host and main witness number one, along with witness number two, our show producer, Rick Snyder. And you, my good friend, are the main witness, to which we say thank you for being with us every Saturday. You may know by now, this is the coolest place where legal minds gather for the latest legal news and time-saving tips, along with the latest community event information. Our mission is educating those in need of legal representation with a solid base of top legal minds and scholars. Everyone knows the only time you need personal injury representation is after you're injured, right? So if you become injured or simply need good legal advice, the good folks at the Robes Law Group know how personal injury works, and they will be happy to assist you. Their mission is getting you well and putting your life back in order. That's how the legal minds meld over at the Robes Law Group. If you've been injured, make contact with their Delray Beach location by dialing 561-570-5700. Throughout Palm Beach County, or you may visit their website at robeslawgroup.com. Coming up on today's show, attorney Mark Astor is with us. He deals with the legal technicalities of alcohol, drug, and mental abuse. If you know someone in this condition, you may want to call them right now and ask them to tune in. Then Letty Sanchez checks in on the charity side of the coronavirus with some creative mask manufacturing that's coming right up. And in the news, yet another Florida man entangles himself in the headlines. Details at the bottom of the hour. And in our Corona Legal segment, attorney Jonathan Lewis checks in with the force majeure of de jure. Corona Legal coming right up after the news. And telephonophobia. In 35 minutes, we'll see if Anita Ward can still ring my bell. We'll find out the truth or a cure, telephonophobia. Don't be afraid to look that up. Once again, we ask you to tell a friend about this show and invite them to listen. Keep social distancing in mind, and when you listen, don't share earbuds and wash your hands. But now it's time to take a look at South Florida's latest legal headlines, brought to you by the Robes Law Group, your community-approved legal brain trust. Here with today's headlines is our consistently random voice of wisdom and full-time news orator, Rick Snyder.
Thank you, Alan. Here are today's headlines from the Robes Law Group newsroom. As always, another Florida man makes the news, a story from the Robes Law Group weird news file, and virus victims report a different symptom. Fizzing. Details on these and other stories at the bottom of the hour.
When we return, want to know how the Robes wallet went viral? What is a Robes wallet anyway? Will it ring my bell? Don't go back. We'll be right away. Personal injury attorneys regularly inundate the airwaves with money-making rants, guaranteeing their clients huge settlements. Call now is their air horn. We make money only if you do is tattooed on their foreheads. Had enough? The Robes Law Group offers sound legal guidance and direction. They work hard for you because it's the right thing to do. What you say or don't say at the scene of an accident matters. Wouldn't it be great if your lawyer was right there with you to guide you through this confusing moment? That's why the Robes Law Group developed a smartphone application. You can download the Robes Law Group app from the App Store or simply text the word ROBES to 474747. That's ROBES, text to 474747. Or call the Robes Law Group today at 561-570-5700. That's 561-570-5700. Or check out their website at robeslawgroup.com. Joining us right now on the phone is Letty Sanchez. She is the design mentor and owner of Thoss. Letty, welcome to Lifestyles in the Law Today.
Hi, thank you so much, Al, for having me on. And thank you to Robes Law Group also for making me a part of this.
Oh, absolutely. Well, what we need to know now is, what does the acronym THOS stand for?
THOS stands for the House of Sanchez, Fashion School of Design. That's been my label. I'm a fashion designer, and that's been my label for almost 20 years.
That makes your website extraordinarily long, and it is thosfashionschoolofdesign.com. So let's get that out of the way. It's THOS, fashionschoolofdesign.com. That's your website.
But people get it, and it's easy to find me.
You're a design school, so now you're designing masks for first responders. How did that idea come about?
In one of my lectures was about reaching target customers and filling in the market gap. And so we started talking about this, and the conversation came up about masks, how, you know, now everyday apparel is going to change. We're going to be wearing masks. And it really got me thinking, especially at night when I'm watching the news like everybody else and watching the first responders, for example, like nurses, who are so fearful to go to work because they don't have enough protective masks. So our first responders are in danger. And what can we do to help?
Wow, that's absolutely a fantastic idea. Kudos to you for coming up with that. So which first responders have received the masks so far?
Local nurses were the first one who started receiving. We called the local hospitals to let them know what we were doing, and we were donating. And then from there, it became nursing homes, police officers, even flight attendants.
Wow, that's fantastic. So let's see. I believe your phone number is 561-294-7280. I'll repeat that one more time. 561-294-7280. Give Letty a call. She'll give you all the information that you need to know about obtaining a mask. And Letty, thank you so much for being on the show today. And thank you for doing what you're doing. That's a fantastic idea.
Thank you for having me. And everybody, stay safe, and we'll get through this one day at a time.
Well, you are a Robes Law Group hero, and we thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for being on the program today.
Here's our next super guest on Lifestyles and the Law Today, brought to you by Robes Law Group of Delray Beach, Florida.
Okay, our first super guest earned his Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Michigan, a Juris Doctorate from Nova Southeastern University College of Law, and a Master of Laws degree, LLM, from American University in Washington College of Law. Mark Astor, welcome to Lifestyles in the Law Today.
Hey, thanks for having me, gentlemen. Oh, nice to see you both.
It's our pleasure. So you were born and raised in the United Kingdom.
I was. Came here just before my 21st birthday. So I tell people my accent is like my hair. It's there, but it's definitely going.
I love it. Well, actually, that's one of the coolest accents ever. During your career, you served as chief of two different county court divisions, I guess Palm Beach County, and where else were you?
Yeah, I was in Palm Beach County. Yeah. I was prosecutor in Palm Beach County. So
you deal, I read your bio, you deal a lot with the opioid crisis, right?
Yeah, so we are, our law firm does one thing and one thing only. We help families whose loved ones are in crisis because of either substance use, mental illness, or mm-hmm. eating disorders. That's all we do, and we're the only law firm in the country that specializes in that kind of work. So
yeah.
It's an area of the law that we really created. I mean, there are other people doing some of the things that we do, but we're open 24/7, and we take calls from not just all over the country, but sometimes out of the country too. So.
Oh, really? You know, it's in the news like crazy. President Trump talks about the opioid crisis all the time. And I know they're trying to stop the flow, but is that the answer? Is stopping the flow the answer, or is it just correcting the problem that makes people want to go to the opioids?
You know, I think that there's not one answer. How's that? There are many reasons why people have these issues. I think there's a genetic component, the sort of the nurture versus nature. Obviously, we're in the middle of a crisis, and I don't mean just corona. I mean, obviously, this is the crisis now, but I mean, we're losing 65,000 people a year in this country to you know, the whole substance use disorder issue. And so it's not just like, well, let's, as Nancy Reagan used to say, the whole idea of just saying no, and God bless her, but you know, that isn't reality, because what they've discovered is it's a disease of the brain.
Right.
And so, like cancer, which is a disease of the body, it has to be treated as such. So just saying no, if I said to you, don't breathe, you'd be like, I gotta breathe, right? Well, to someone who has a substance use disorder, they gotta use.
Right. I read somewhere that the biggest opioid provider are doctors. Is that true? People get hooked on the prescription.
Sure. Right? I mean, look, we've got doctors in the family, and I will tell you that, you know, I remember my brother telling me that one of the hardest things he had to do in med school was remembering all the different medications they mm-hmm. teach him about. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you from my brother-in-law, who is in private practice, my brother actually is a hospitalist. He's in the middle of this craziness that we're dealing with today. But my brother-in-law, who is in private practice, I mean, they got different, you know, the pharmaceutical, you know, reps coming in and out all day long. And so, you know,
sell.
Our doctors are taught to push medications, you know. Yeah. So, you know, the idea that we will treat everything with a pill has become somewhat ingrained in, you know, and our, you know, medical care, as it were.
Right.
And I'm not saying there isn't a time for medications. There is a time for that, even when you're dealing with somebody who has a mental health issue. But we're very quick to prescribe medications. And I can tell you from what we see is that when you start prescribing, especially these medications for somebody who has some type of mental health issue like ADD or ADHD, that's a recipe for disaster, and it's the gateway to other types of drugs.
Yeah, that's the Ritalin road, right?
You got it.
Yeah. That's bad stuff, that Ritalin, right?
Yeah, I mean, we had a case once where we got a call from a parent whose 4-year-old child was prescribed Ritalin.
Four years old?
Do you know
what
that does to a 4-year-old's brain? I mean, up until 25, the brain is still forming. You start putting, you know, those kinds of drugs in there, you can cause permanent damage, and then you have somebody who has become addicted to that type of medication.
Can a lawyer assist me to get help for a loved one who has a substance abuse or a mental health disorder? I mean, that's a pretty big question. But,
yep. Yeah, well, that's what we deal with on a daily basis.
You're not a doctor, though. I mean, what are you going to do to help?
Yeah, I'm not a doctor. So there are a couple of statutes on the books here in Florida that enable me to help a family who wants to make a decision for a loved one to get into treatment.
Mm-hmm.
We call it involuntary commitment, but basically what we're doing is we're going into court, getting a court order to send somebody to treatment. And because of the nature of what we do, a lot of that is done on an emergency basis, which means we're sometimes either sending out our own investigator who's a retired cop, or we're sending, you know, the sheriff's office out to go and get somebody off the street and pick them up and take them to treatment.
So is that, do you use like the Baker Act or the Marchman Act?
So I do all the Marchman Act work in the office. That's 99.9% of what I do. And Audra, my other partner, does 99.9% of the guardianship cases.
Yeah, we had her on a show a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
She's really good.
She's absolutely terrific. And sometimes we'll do those things together. So
two for the price of two. I mean, two for the price of
one. No, you got it right the first time. It was two for the price of two.
It works better that way. Well, what's the difference between the Baker Act and the Marchman Act?
Pretty much the length of time that somebody can be held for. So the Baker Act is really just a 72-hour mental health stabilization hold.
Right.
The Marchman Act, which is two steps, in a nutshell, that allows me to get somebody sent to treatment for up to 90 days.
Oh.
So so our typical Marchman Act case runs about 6 months. Because we know from experience, if you keep somebody in recovery for about a year, their chances are they're going to stay in recovery. If it's less than a year, chances are they're going to relapse.
Really? I was just going to ask, how long does it... I know it's on an individual basis. I mean, not everybody will respond to the treatment the same, but 90 days seems like you pretty well straightened out after 90 days.
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, you got somebody who's been using for 5 or 10 years, especially from their, you know, younger to formative years, 90 days is just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, those kinds of cases, they're going to run for 6 months, you know, of treatment, and then probably another 6 months of some form of aftercare.
That's incredible. It takes that long. This drug must be, the opioid thing must be really tough on a person. You just can't shake that easily, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're not just talking about pills. I mean, you know, marijuana and and heroin and cocaine and all those other little different types of things
opioids, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can call it that. But, I mean, there's so many different things, and it does such significant damage to the brain. It just takes time to heal.
And you hear so many stories that I've been in and out of rehab more times than the front door at a McDonald's. I mean, what's the problem? Why aren't they getting fixed?
Well, again, there's no.
Did I lay a big one on you?
You did, but that's okay. We're going to answer it. There's no one answer. Sometimes it's the facility. Sometimes the person's not in treatment long enough, and sometimes that miracle of recovery doesn't happen on the first go round in treatment.
Yeah, it's kind of up to the person. We've heard it said before, until you hit rock bottom, you don't really know where you are.
Well, I think it's not so much an issue of rock bottom, because sometimes rock bottom can be dead.
True.
But I think it's a matter of, you got to keep in there long enough with the idea that at some point that light bulb will go off, and mm-hmm. the rational brain will take over and realize they need to be in treatment, and then they need to stay there. That doesn't happen for everybody. So I'll tell you, there are times when we lose people. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had that call from the parent, you know, where we've had somebody treatment for 6 months, and then I get a call, you know, 3-4 months later, and they'll say, you know, my son or my daughter overdosed and died. I've had those calls.
Oh,
so,
man.
You know, I don't sell a magic pill, but I will tell you, we have tremendous success of what we do. But it really is the beginning of the process, not the end.
Right. How fast can a Marchman Act be initiated? I mean, Baker Act, I think a cop can come and just look at you and say, you're gone. And that happens instantly. What about the Marchman Act?
So normally I can get somebody picked up within a couple of hours, depending how busy the courts are.
Mm-hmm.
And as it happens, I've also got a licensed clinical social worker who's part of our team. So if it's a real emergency, and maybe it's on a weekend when the courts aren't open, I mean, mm-hmm. I can have him go to the scene and initiate a Baker Act and then follow that up with a Marchman Act. So our response time is, you know, it's as quick as the police. And actually, I'd rather send my licensed clinical social worker down there, because sometimes the police just don't want to deal with it. And that's with all due respect to them. But I'd rather have a clinician make the decision than a police officer.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. Do I necessarily need a lawyer to file a Marchman Act? I mean, I guess the Baker Act, I think you pick up the phone, call the cops, and they're on their way. But what about the Marchman Act?
You don't. You don't need a lawyer to do it. You could go down to the courthouse, and if you can figure out how to get through the paperwork, you could file it yourself. But there's a couple of pitfalls. Number one, it's a complicated statute, so just being able to meet the statutory requirements is not so easy. Number two, if you can get through all the paperwork and you actually get to court, your loved one's going to get a court-appointed lawyer who's extremely skilled in the minutiae of the Marchman Act. So so that puts you at an immediate disadvantage. Let's say you get through all that and you actually get the person sent to treatment, and then they walk out. Okay, mm-hmm. How do you go about enforcing it? Well, unless you're a lawyer, you're not going to know how to do that. You're not going to know how to respond. And if it's midnight on a Saturday night, and I can tell you, I get those calls and I will take them, unless you have access to somebody like me who's got a cop on staff who can go and find your kid, right. Good luck. Because by Monday morning at 9 a.m. when you run to the courthouse, they may be dead.
We have an old adage here. We say this on the show all the time. I don't hire a plumber to fix my TV, and I don't hire an electrician to fix my sink. If you're in the weeds on this, folks, you just pick up the phone and call the lawyer. You could call the Robes Law Group at 561-570-5700, and they will get you in touch with Mark or anybody that you need. That's what they do at the Robes Law Group.
Yeah.
So what happens if my loved one leaves the treatment while under the Marchman Act? You just talked about that. They could just take off and go. How do you prevent
that? Well, they can. So the question that a lot of families ask me, or they say to me, we want you to lock our loved one up. Well, in Florida, despite the fact we love to lock people up, we only lock up two types of people, criminals and people that violate court orders. So we don't lock up people who are the respondent in a civil commitment like a Marchman Act or a guardianship.
Right.
So in theory, they could walk out, and maybe 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20 does walk out. So the response is, number one, is the treatment facility should call the police immediately,
right,
and ask the police to issue what's called a BOLO, be on the lookout. Especially here in Palm Beach County here, where we've got Boca PD and Delray PD, who are phenomenal at this stuff. Mm-hmm. They will go looking for the person, and if they find him, they'll bring him back to treatment.
Mm.
The other thing is, you know, as I said, I've got a retired cop on staff, Dan Reamer, who's really been amazing and just has been a game changer for us. A lot of time, like, you know, if the family wants to, they can hire him to go out and find their loved one, so that way once we find the person, we can grab him and bring him back either to treatment or receiving facility, or, you know, even the jail if the judge is willing to entertain it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's normally what we do, and then we can talk to the court about either contempt or some other type of relief.
Or it could get worse. I mean, think about this. A guy gets checked in, he's had enough, he leaves, and then the police go to pick him up, and he resists. Now, that's another charge, right?
Yeah, and we've had that happen, actually, mm-hmm. where somebody walked out of a treatment center, the police got called, and the young man got into a bit of a brouhaha with the police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to go back
now. Now he's got a felony criminal charge pending.
Yeah, exactly. It just gets worse.
It gets worse. Yeah. You got it.
And when we were talking to Audra about this exact same thing, and if you tell them to calm down, if they don't, you're in a precarious situation. Because they're going off on you.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, I get to speak to a lot of people that I march and act, and sometimes they're happy to see me, and sometimes they're not. It's okay.
Well, yeah, that was one of her questions. Will my family hate me if you do that?
Yeah. You know what? That is a question I get all the time. And you know what? Your loved one might hate you, but I'm going to tell you something. If you don't do something and they die, you'll hate you.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll hate you.
The alternative is worse.
The alternative is worse. And it's, you know, look, doing this is a very serious commitment of time, energy, and money. And it's not an easy decision to make. And I always applaud the families that do it. It's a brave decision to make this commitment, to go to court and get a court order and make your loved one go to treatment. Mm-hmm. But as I tell every family I speak to who is having a difficult time making the decision, there's only one of three places somebody with a substance use disorder can go: treatment, prison, or the morgue. You get to pick which one.
That's it.
That's it. There's
hospital,
no other places. Those are the choices.
Do I have to be physically present in Florida to order or file a Marchman Act?
No, you don't. So the jurisdiction of the court is going to be determined by where the respondent is. In other words, where your loved one is.
Yeah.
They don't have to be a resident of Florida. I just literally need their feet to be touching the ground here. Mm-hmm. So it's not unusual for us to work with, say, some type of clinician or an interventionist who's bringing somebody here for treatment. And obviously, if the family's in New York or as far west as California, because we've had a couple of people come from California for treatment, you know, if you're 3,000 miles away, you want that safety net. You want to know that you can call somebody if your loved one has a relapse or if they're non-compliant or if they walk out of treatment.
Right.
So as long as they're here, we can Marchman Act them. Now, I will tell you that with a Marchman Act, there's going to be at least one court hearing. Mm-hmm. And before all this stuff with the coronavirus, that hearing, if it was contested, because the person has a right to, you know, to fight this thing, does require me to basically put on a case. It's like a small trial.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a couple hours at most. So yeah, sometimes we have parents that will fly in from another state to be present for the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we want their loved one to know, yeah, we're serious about this, because if you're not going to agree to go to treatment, then we got to put on our case and we'll just have you ordered to go.
That's it. Well, Florida's known for two things: retirement homes and rehab centers.
That's for sure.
We have a lot of rehab centers down here in Florida.
We do.
And that's a good answer, because I'm sure parents that live in a different state, they're concerned about their children. So all they have to do is give you a call, and you can take care of everything there, right?
Yeah, as a general, I typically don't meet my clients until we go to court. I rarely meet a client before that.
Mm. What about insurance? Does that cover most of that stuff?
Well, it doesn't cover me. And it, you know, really depends on your insurance carrier. So mm-hmm. sometimes where we send the person to treatment can be determined by who their insurance carrier is, right? Who is in network with the insurance company and who's not.
Right.
Now, you know, the sort of the big elephant in the room is, if you don't have insurance or the ability to pay for treatment, where does your loved one go?
Right.
So now we're talking about the county facility, which, if there's room, can be great, but most of the time there isn't. They're just, you know, under-resourced, unfortunately.
Hmm. We've been talking with Mark Astor. He is one man's crisis, taking care of the opioid crisis. He's the go-to guy. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you could prepare for an accident, it wouldn't be called an accident, would it? According to the U.S. Department of Transportation, more than 6 million traffic accidents occur every year. Cars, trucks, or motorcycles, it happens. The real question is, if it happens to you, what will you do? Statistics show the sooner you have legal representation, the better the outcome of your case. Wouldn't it be great if your lawyer was right there with you to guide you through this confusing moment? What you say or don't say at the scene of an accident matters. That's why the Robes Law Group developed a smartphone application. You can download the Robes Law Group app from the App Store or simply text the word ROBES to 474747. That's ROBES. Text to 474747. Or call the Robes Law Group today at 561-570-5700. That's 561-570-5700. Or check out their website at robeslawgroup.com. Coming up on the second half of the show, Mark Astor is still with us. He knows how to navigate the legal highway better than a rocket scientist with a GPS. Have an alcohol, drug, or mental abuse question? Give the Robes Law Group a call right now, 561-570-5700. Then we have a new segment on the show, Corona Legal. With the government shutdown in full force,
What will the legal community do when everything settles down? Attorney Jonathan Lewis has the Corona Legal Update in just a few moments. But right now, it's time for all the news that maybe shouldn't be news, brought to you by the Robes Law Group of Delray Beach. Download their smartphone app by texting the word ROBES to 474747. Rick Snyder, our show producer, has a stack of sticky stuff that will have an everlasting effect on super glue. Rick, what's going on in the world of lawlessness?
Thanks, Alan. From the Robes Law Group newsroom, we've got stories of Florida man spit at police officers and told them he had the coronavirus as they arrested him for shoplifting. Christopher Abad, arrested Monday night at an Orlando 7-Eleven, was charged with theft, assault and battery on a law enforcement officer. Abad coughed on and tried to kick an officer who attempted to handcuff him. Once secured, Abad spit on the officer, tried to spit on other officers. Abad also threatened to shoot a store employee who confronted him. Police haven't confirmed whether Abad was tested for the coronavirus after his arrest. Earlier this month, federal prosecutors charged Jamal Curry of St. Petersburg with perpetrating a biological weapons hoax after police said he coughed on an officer's arm during a domestic violence arrest and claimed to have COVID-19. Curry later tested negative for the virus. Add this to the growing list of coronavirus awful toll on victims, a symptom that produces a strange buzzing sensation throughout the body. This side effect, reported by patients sharing their symptoms on Twitter, is now being described as fizzing and is one of the more mysterious marks of the illness. Other symptoms of the deadly disease include a loss of smell and taste, fever, aches, breathlessness, a fatigue, a dry cough, and others. But as more and more patients share the effects of the illness online, many are finding they have the strange new symptom too, fizzing. Doctors say the symptom is not terribly common, but may be part of an autoimmune response that affects patients' nervous system. The feeling may be the result of disease-fighting antibodies interfering with the way nerves work, but adds that neurologists still aren't sure if it's our body's response to the virus or the virus itself causing the feeling. And finally, a welcome mat at the front door of a Florida home read, "Come back with a warrant." And that's just what the deputies did before finding drugs and drug paraphernalia inside. The Daytona Beach News Journal reports the home in Palm Coast was part of an investigation into illegal drugs. After seeing the doormat, authorities say the Flagler County Sheriff's Office got the warrant. Deputies found fentanyl and drug paraphernalia inside during a search. Flagler County Sheriff Rick Staley said this poison peddler had a doormat that said, "Come back with a warrant." So we did. Our detectives did a great job following up on tips received on this residence. We still have some follow-up work to do, he said, but for now, the deadly drugs and syringes seized are off the streets. Investigators say there were 4 people inside, but no arrests were immediately made. The Florida Department of Children and Families were contacted regarding a child in the home at the time. Alan, that's our news today. Back to you.
Thanks a lot, Rick. Really appreciate that. Love the Florida man stories.
And we've got another one coming next week.
I can't wait.
Here's our next super guest on Lifestyles and the Law Today, brought to you by Robes Law Group of Delray Beach, Florida.
We are with Mark Astor. He is one man's attorney fighting the opioid crisis. That must be a tough job. Mark, thanks for hanging around and welcome back to the second half of the show.
Thanks for having me, gents. This has been fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, we try and keep it entertaining. That's the whole deal.
That's for sure, yes.
Yep. Now, we talked about a lot of things in the first segment, and one thing I'd like to straighten out there is if you file the Marchman Act, is what we've been talking about, and the person that you're filing it against could also get an attorney and fight you.
Correct. So if they have funds, they can go and hire a private lawyer to defend them. So I do that every once in a while. Not a lot, but we get those calls every once in a while. But if they don't have the finances to hire a lawyer, the court's going to give them one.
What kind of a defense? I mean, if they're a drug addict and they're hooked on opioids and all that, what kind of defense could they possibly come up with?
Yeah, so normally, because the statute is rather complicated, what we're really talking about is some type of technical deficiency in the allegations, which is why when families tell me they're going to go follow paperwork on their own, I cringe because I know how difficult it is for me to make sure we have all the you know, I's dotted and T's crossed.
Right.
And so sometimes that can be a defense. And then there have been probably the one or two cases where somebody, you know, a family told me that there was a significant issue, and then we got in the court and that turned out not to be the case. So sometimes what people might mean well, if they're less than candid with the court, that can affect their credibility in front of a judge.
I'll leave it at that. Yeah, how does the court judge, suppose it's just a vengeance thing? You know, that little brat, I'm tired of him, I'm gonna do the Marchman Act on him and put him away and get rid of him. Do they see through that pretty easily?
They do, and I'll tell you, we try to do a good job vetting the cases. I'll give you an example if you have time, but mm-hmm. I had a woman who had me Marchman Act her boyfriend, and he was a lot considerably younger than her, and they'd been in a relationship for many, many years, and I got him into treatment for 2 months. And after 2 months, the treatment center said, he's done, he's good to go. And she was insistent that I, extend the petition, extend the treatment services order, and I said, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Treatment center has said he's good to go. Yeah. And she said to me, well, if you don't do it, I'm going to file a bar complaint against you. So I said, okay, go ahead, file a bar complaint.
Yeah.
I called the bar, and I spoke to an ethics lawyer, and they said, you should terminate your service. You should fire the client and move to withdraw. So that's what I did. I filed them, and it's only the second time in 26 years of being a lawyer that I've had to fire a client.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're bound by a certain code of ethics, and the Marchman Act, as I always tell people, is it's a shield, not a sword. It's to help people, not hurt them. And in this particular case, it was obvious to me after 60 days that she was using it to try and hurt this gentleman, and
right.
I wasn't going to be a participant in that. And I told her, you can do whatever you want. I'm not filing this, and I moved to withdraw, and the judge granted it, and I never heard from her again.
That's good to know, because I'm thinking here, wow, what about a divorce? And the lady's thinking, man, I got to get this guy, and I'll just file the Marchman Act.
We've had those two.
Are they recognizable? Hopefully they're recognizable.
They are. And it's interesting, because sometimes we will get calls from former spouses,
mm-hmm.
and they have a child. And the sort of interesting dynamic of it is sometimes the parents, I mean, they absolutely loathe each other, but mm-hmm. the parent who's my client will recognize the fact that, so say I'm representing dad, that mom is a good mom, and that she loves the child and the child needs her, and she may have a substance use issue, like she drinks too much,
right?
And dad wants to get her clean for the benefit of the child. Mm. And so we get a lot of those cases.
Mm.
And so what we're really trying to do is to come together so that we can make sure the child has two parents instead of one.
Mm. Which falls back to the earlier questions. Will my loved ones be angry with me?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds
probably.
That sounds like the case. What was one of your most interesting cases? You've been doing this for quite a while. You must have one that will strike the memory.
I do, actually. I do. So, we always, because I have doctors in the family and Audra has doctors in the family, we always, when we first get a call on a case, we call it triaging the case, right? Finding out
yeah.
what it's really about. Like, what's the root cause of things? Because mm-hmm. sometimes our family will call us and say, well, I want to do a Marchman Act. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's figure out what's going on. So we had a call from a family. They were in Illinois. Their daughter was down here. And she clearly had a drug problem.
Mm-hmm.
She was in her early 30s, and what we found out from speaking to the family was that when she was 16 years of age, she told her parents that 2 years before that, when she was 14, she had been sexually assaulted by a teacher.
Mm.
And the family sent her to see a psychiatrist who medicated her. So for about 15 years, she was highly medicated, and of course that medication led to the use of drugs, because she had significant trauma, not just from the sexual assault, but from the fact that sexual assault was never actually ever addressed. And so by the time she was 31 or 32, she was acting out, posting photographs of herself on Facebook, carrying an assault weapon and threatening to do horrible things to lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so while that, at first glance looked like a Marchman Act case, it was really more of a guardianship case, because she needed significant mental health help to deal with the trauma that she'd suffered. So I believe in that case, we did both. And we did both because the Marchman Act is faster than the guardianship, and I can get somebody picked up within a couple of hours. But ultimately, we filed the guardianship case with that young lady. We got her into a facility, and then at some point, the family moved her back up to Illinois. And the last I heard, she was doing much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting case, if only because I don't think we'd, at that point, we were in the early stages of the firm, we had never really seen a case where what looked like a drug case, a drug dependency case, was really a case of significant trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you that we see a lot of trauma, sexual abuse, physical abuse. I mean, that is a big part of what we see. I mean, nobody just suddenly picks up drugs and starts doing it because they feel like they want to do it. There's normally some trauma there.
Mm.
Not always, but most of the time.
I know a few musicians that do that, but yeah, I know what you're saying. That's once again, that's another case where the doctor prescribed the meds? And then is there anything that stops, like the length of time? Do the doctors just keep re-prescribing? I mean, don't you think that somewhere along the line the doctor would say, hey, you've been on this now for 8 months. I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, the doctors now are supposed to be entering all this information into a system so that if you start to, quote, doctor shop, doctor number two can see what doctor number one did in terms of prescribing medications. Because what was typically happening is that, you know, these individuals would go from, you know, one doctor to the next.
Yeah, doctor shopping, yeah.
Either a pain doctor or a psychiatrist asking for medications. Is there a better course of action that can be had? And maybe it's not because they want to continue to use. It's just that they haven't yet been provided an alternative to, you know, mixing the pills with the booze.
Right.
And maybe it's a matter of getting them some help. It's not that they don't want help, it's that they just don't know how to do it. Well, the family doesn't have the resources. So sometimes, you know, directing the traffic in that direction as opposed to be like, oh, got to march Benactum, got to get them clean.
That's not always
the answer.
You have to look at everything.
You really do. You need to know what's going on behind the doors, as it were.
What's going on in the world of legislation now with regard to the opioid crisis? I know there's a lot in the news. Well, the coronavirus has wiped out all the news. But every now and then, there's still a few little issues with the opioid crisis. I know the president talks about it all the time. But I hope they're open-minded enough in their legislation that they take into account for people that really need the medication.
Well, so I think the big thing that's really happened, especially down here in South Florida, is the Sober Homes Task Force that we have down here in Palm Beach County, which is being run by State Attorney Dave Ehrenberg and Chief Assistant Al Johnson. And that has really made a big difference down here. You know, people that are committing insurance fraud, people that are patient brokering, receiving kickbacks, you know, those types of things.
That's against the law, isn't it?
It is against the law.
Yeah.
So people who are basically abusing the system or trying to benefit financially to the chagrin of people who are coming down here for what they believe is legitimate treatment. Those kinds of individuals are getting sort of driven out of the industry.
Yeah.
So, I've spoken publicly about this before. I think that Dave and Al have done an amazing job, and they continue to do so. And I think we have to continue to arrest people who are really taking advantage of the vulnerable.
Yeah.
So
that's always the problem. You have good intentions, and sometimes the wallet gets in the way. I think so.
No question about it. You know, and I don't have a problem. Look, you can still make a good living doing something. The treatment, there's nothing wrong with a treatment center or any type of professional making a living doing what they're doing, but there's making a living and then there's just taking advantage of people.
Hmm. You know, we talked about the Marchman and the Guardian. Now, we're pretty much sure the Baker Act, that's something that's sort of not the same. What's the main differences between the Marchman Act and the guardianship?
Okay, so they're both forms of relief. It's just we may use one instead of the other. So it's kind of like, what's the difference between a Ford and a Chevy? Well, they both get you from A to B. It just depends, like, do you need a pickup truck or do you need a sports car?
Right.
Do you need a Corvette or do you need a pickup truck? So it depends. And so a lot of the time what we're trying to figure out, if we don't have a clinician who's involved or an interventionist, is what's really driving things. So if there's significant mental illness, in other words, maybe there's an eating disorder. We get a lot of calls about eating disorders. And so even if there's a little bit of substance use issue there, that is clearly a guardianship case.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, because there's mental health issues there, and so they're probably not even going to meet Marchman Act criteria. And even if they do, putting them in a facility that is primary substance use disorder focused is not going to be the answer. I mean, if, you know, little Tommy or little Jane hasn't, you know, is barely eating, and yet they smoke a little weed to make themselves feel better, putting them in a drug treatment center is clearly not the answer. There's something else going on there.
Right.
So a lot of the time that's a guardianship type case. Sometimes we will file a Marchman together with a guardianship. So let me give you an example. We had a family and they were out of state, but their daughter was somewhere in Central Florida, if I remember correctly. And it was a guardianship case, but she was also using. So in that particular jurisdiction, for whatever reason, normally order can get into court within, even on an emergency, 24 to 48 hours.
Mm.
For some reason, the court was just not moving as quickly as we wanted to. And, you know, 3 or 4 days had gone by and we couldn't get a hearing set. So because there was enough there for a Marchman Act, I filed the first part of the Marchman Act because it's two steps, and I was able to get an emergency court order and I had the police go over to her house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they knocked on the door, nobody answered, so they called paramedics who climbed up on a ladder. They were able to see in the house and they saw that she was what appeared to be unconscious in the house. Somehow they were able to get her to wake up. She came to the front door, answered the door, and then collapsed. So they took her to a hospital, they cleared her, and then we had her placed in a detox,
mm-hmm.
where they could stabilize her after she'd been medically cleared. And while that was going on, we had the guardianship going full steam ahead. So we didn't file the second part of the Marchman Act, the treatment services part, because the guardianship was taking over. So we always sort of think of guardianship as sort of Marchman Act Junior. If it's primary mental illness, we're going to probably go with a guardianship. If it's primary substance use, we're probably going to go with a Marchman. But there are all times when the two of them need to be done together. And it could be because the Marchman is just a little bit quicker.
What's the responsibility factor for the guardianship as opposed to the Marchman Act?
So the Marchman Act is just a treatment services order. And what it just is a court order that says your loved one will go to treatment, and this is for how long. The guardianship can be a number of things. It can be giving the parents, or who are typically the guardian, the ability not just to make medical decisions, but it might be the ability to make financial decisions. So maybe there is, maybe there's an automobile involved, so that their loved one is using the car to, you know, leave treatment or go to other jurisdictions. Maybe there's a trust there where, you know, the individual's using the trust to finance the habit.
That happens.
That does happen. It does happen. So
the guardianship, you have a little more control over that, right?
It gives you more relief. And so sometimes, like for Audra, we're pretty creative with the guardianship statute, because I'll tell you this, what we use it for, it was never intended to be used for, but maybe that's a whole other conversation. But sometimes you have people who refuse to take their medications. They just don't want to take them. And without the medications, they're really, they're more inclined to use substances. They start to act erratically. They can act violently. And so sometimes, if they're not going to take their medications, we need a court order. And basically, the judge will say, look, you need to take your medications. And if you don't, I'm going to order the deputy over there to take you to a hospital. They will strap you down, and they'll give you the medications intravenously, because we can't have you running around like this.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, sometimes we'll have to, you know, get that kind of a court order. Because sometimes you have to make a decision for somebody who either cannot or will not make that decision.
Wow. I'm glad I'm not in any of that. Oof, that sounds kind of scary. Is there anything in the law that you would change? I mean, the Marchman Act, I mean, a lot of rules, a lot of regulations.
Yeah.
Is there anything in there that hampers you to get the job done, or anything you'd like to see changed? We'll get the governor to listen to this program.
Yeah, he's got his hands full right now, but maybe when he gets a chance, he'll listen to the recording. You know, I think if there's one or two things, obviously we'd love the response time to be a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one snag I sometimes have to deal with is if somebody does walk out of treatment, it's the ability to respond. I'd like to be able to respond a little bit quicker, because if they walk out on a Saturday night, I'm not getting to court until Monday morning. I mean, we can file 24/7, but we're not getting a judge to review it. And so obviously that can be a problem. Once in a blue moon, it is. I wish we could respond a little bit quicker.
Yeah, we'll have to get Harry Anderson in here and open up night court, and then
that's what we need. We need night court.
Yeah, he could do it.
Listen, I've actually tried doing that, and I got let's just say I upset the chief judge, and I'll leave it at that. I'm a bit of a maverick, but I think that saving people's lives is more important than not upsetting the chief judge. So
yeah, I tend to agree with you there.
Not that I don't have respect for the chief judge, because I know her personally, and she's a fine lady, but I'm in the business of saving people's kids, and if that upsets people, it's just too bad.
Yeah, so a little shorter time for the response. Could you, just a question, if you see something that you need to take care of straight away and you can't get to the judge, could you just use the Baker Act? Take care of it that way?
Yeah.
I mean, how many different, can you use all these things at the same time?
Yeah, you can. So let's say that we need an immediate response. We'll normally get Evan, who's our social worker, our licensed clinical social worker, to go out to the scene. And if they meet criteria, he will initiate a Baker Act. He'll just call the police and say, look, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm initiating a Baker Act. Take them.
Yeah.
And they will take them to a facility. So that will normally buy us up to a 72-hour window where I can file a Marchman Act petition and ask the judge, Your Honor, when this person is released from their Baker Act, they are to be taken by the police to the facility that we're just going to designate. And so that can buy us a little window.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it really has it's kind of
ways around it, yeah.
It's shrunk our response time. I mean, I can normally do a Marchman Act, you know, from filing to pickup within 4 to 6 hours, which is ridiculously quick.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you don't even have that much time.
Right.
So, and we get a lot of those emergency calls.
And the emergency calls, because on the other side of that coin is, like you say, they walk out on a Friday night, you don't know about it on Monday, Sunday afternoon, they could be dead.
Correct. They could be.
Wow. Mark Astor, you are the man. Thank you so much for enlightening on this. I know you're a busy guy. You got things to do. And thank you for taking your time and spending it with us this weekend.
Thanks for having me. It was nice to meet both of you.
Yeah, you bet. Mark Astor, thank you for being on the show today. This is the time when we say, hey, folks, listen to this. When you hear that sound, something bad is about to happen.
Good afternoon. This is Christina at the Robes Law Group. How can I help you?
And that's the sound of confidence. Confidence in knowing you have selected the right team to represent you in your hour of need. The Department of Transportation tells us more than 5 million crashes occur every year. That's more than 13,600 accidents every single day. Every day. So be aware of... And remember, when you need legal representation, call the good folks at Robes Law Group at 561-570-5700. That's 561-570-5700. Or better yet, download the Robes Law Group app by texting the word ROBES to 474747. That's ROBES to 474747.
This is Christina at the Robes Law Group. How can I help you?
Welcome back to Lifestyles in the Law today. I'm Alan Mason, your host and non-legal orator, along with our show producer, Rick Snyder, with a message for those afflicted with telephonophobia. If you have a fear of talking on the phone, not to worry, it's a common phobia. Besides, phobiacs prefer texting. There may not be a cure, but I do have some great news for phobic texters. Grab your smartphone, if you're not driving, and text the word ROBES, that's R-O-B-E-S, to 474747, and download the ROBES Law Group app and open it. It's a beautiful app. There's many options. Listen to the show or contact the office 24/7, 365. Besides, the smart folks at the ROBES Law Group give you peace of mind knowing that legal representation is in the palm of your hand. Just a friendly reminder, when you hire ROBES from the app, you'll receive a $1,000 fee credit when your case is settled. Oh, okay, how about that? That's 1,000 Federal Reserve notes just for hiring ROBES from the app. Remember, text the word ROBES to 474747. Got it? Get it? Problem solved.
Millions of Americans have joined together to halt the spread of this horrible disease. Our experts and scientists report that our strategy to slow the spread has saved hundreds of thousands of lives. Our team of experts now agrees that we can begin the next front in our war, which we are calling Opening Up America Again.
What happens when the coronavirus shutdown hits the legal community head on? Lifestyles in the Law today presents Corona Legal. The last word settles the case. Joining us on the phone right now is attorney Jonathan Lewis. He is a shareholder and partner at Jonathan Lewis Law of Boca Raton. They specialize in business and real estate law. Jonathan, welcome to Lifestyles in the Law today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, we have a few questions. We know what's happening with the economy right now. Everything is in shutdown mode. So when the government shuts down businesses and the economy, how does that affect negotiations and new deal making?
Well, you know, for the first time, a lot of business owners are pulling out their contracts and they're looking at the provisions because a lot of the businesses are in survival mode right now. There's still deals going on and there's just different types of issues and, of course, different types of business transactions.
All right. Well, the catchphrase of the du jour is force majeure. What in the world is force majeure? I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Force majeure is one of those paragraphs usually at the end of the contract and what they call the miscellaneous provisions. What it means is that act of God, if something happens that interrupts a business, it's called a force majeure, where it's a temporary interruption of the company's ability to do business. And it usually relates to acts of God or a union strike or a hurricane. And of course, with the COVID, no one really anticipated that there would be a worldwide pandemic in the definition of force majeure. And so there's a lot of gray area in the definition right now.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't think the government was God, so I don't know if the government shut down the economy. I don't know if that's an act of God. How are they going to determine that?
It's going to be a matter of litigation. We actually have cases right now where trucks are showing up at warehouses wanting to drop off shipments. And the business owners don't want to receive the shipments because they don't want to pay for it. They don't have the money. And so The business owners are trying to invoke the force majeure clause, saying, listen, there's been a temporary interruption. Of course, the word temporary, nobody knows how long this is going to last. Even the government doesn't know how long this force majeure is going to last. And there's different definitions in each state as far as when the government's saying that business is open again. And so, you know, when the definition is up in the air and there's gray area, that's open season for the litigators.
Well, this is called business interruption insurance. Is there another name for it that I'm not aware of?
Well, business interruption insurance is the insurance that the business owners rely on if their business is interrupted. Now, what happens, though, with the force majeure clause is that the business owners are trying to rely on the force majeure to say that they do not have to perform and they don't have to pay for goods or services. And then the parties that are trying to sell them the goods or services are saying, well, there's not really a force majeure because you can still receive the goods and you can still sell them. And so then it's a question of whether the business owner can actually do business.
Jonathan Lewis, thank you for calling in today. We appreciate your advice and insight. You are a super guy, and thank you for joining us today on Lifestyles and the Law Today. I'm still Alan Mason, your host and non-legal orator, here with some carefully selected words. Have you ever heard the saying, no risk, no reward? What about the greater the risk, the bigger the reward? It's all about the risk, isn't it? Every time you grab your car keys, you are preparing to drive into the risk field. There are thousands of factors which determine the amount of risk, weather, traffic conditions, or the condition of your vehicle. But there is a risk. Good part is, you get to determine the degree of risk you're willing to take. But when those conditions get the best of you, that's when your heartaches begin. That's why the Robes Law Group developed a handy wallet about the size of a number 10 envelope that fits perfectly in the glove box of your car. The wallet has contact numbers, website, and texting information, plus a what-to-do list in case you're involved in an accident. What you say or don't say at the scene of an accident could determine the outcome of your case. Want a free Robes wallet? Call right now, 561-570-5700, and ask Christina to send you a Robes glove box wallet, and the information within should ease the pain of an unfortunate experience. If you're just starting out in life, moving along through the middle, or a seasoned adult enjoying the trip, it can't hurt to have a backup of your hard drive, an extra memory stick, or a relation with a lawyer who knows what he's doing. Looking for the best outcome? Join the list of satisfied Robes clients and call the good folks at Robes Law Group, 561-570-5700, or visit them at their website, robeslawgroup.com. Again, that phone number, 561-570-5700. Coming up next week, Esteban Benitez is with us. As the Chiffons once said, he's a sweet-talking guy. He knows more about personal injury than I do. Tune in next week, Esteban Benitez. We would like to thank you for joining us every Saturday. Your company is appreciated. Listen to Lifestyles and the Law Today right here on West Palm Beach's flagship station, WJNO AM 1290, every Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. Tell your friends about the show. Any friend of yours is a friend of ours. We hope our mission catapulted legal knowledge throughout the applicable media outlets where it has been known to ebb and flow. This show is underwritten by the Robes Law Group of Delray Beach and originates from the iHeartMedia studios in West Palm Beach, Florida. Executive producer is John Mitchell, show producer Rick Snyder, audio engineer John Nutter, and I'm your host, Alan Mason. Sneeze you next week.